Welcome to another episode of My Wake-Up Call. It's your host, Dr. Mark Goulston. You know what we do here. We interview influencers, people who make the world better. Actually, I interview people who make me happier every day. And today is no exception. And then we ask them what matters most to them. And they're all successful, but more than that, something matters to them. And we find out what matters to them. We find out their story. And, you know, I'm starting to sound like Jimmy Fallon. I fawn all over these guests sometimes. But let me tell you about Michael Houlihan and Bonnie Harvey. They're the founders of Barefoot Wine. You know, I'm sure you've seen Barefoot Wine. And if you're smart, you will have tried it. It's America's number one wine brand. Their New York Times business bestseller, The Barefoot Spirit, is now required reading in more than 50 schools of entrepreneurship. They're thought leaders in entrepreneurship, they're workshop leaders, speakers, bloggers, writers, consultants, and they're regular media guests. And you're not seeing them because you're on audio, but I'm on video with them and I'm looking in their home, and it is just so charming, comfortable as they are. They have a new audiobook, which is presented in a theatrical format with Hollywood actors playing the parts, has an original musical score with sound effects and more. And I'd like to welcome Bonnie and Michael. They are entrepreneurial pioneers in America. And if you don't know about them, you should check them out wherever you can find that. You can find them at Barefoot Spirit, by the way. So welcome, Bonnie and Michael. So good to see you again.
Nice to see you again, Mark.
Yes, we're delighted to be in your company, Mark.
Well, the same here. So I'll ask you what I ask everybody else. And to my listeners, we're going to play a clip from their audio book, Barefoot Spirit. Actually, I'm going to play the clip now. And so listen in, and here's a treat for all of us.
She needed to make it solid. She needed Michael to draw it, and she needed this to happen fast. That's why she was almost vibrating to get it out, and why she hustled the half-asleep Michael to the little green chalkboard in the kitchen.
I know what the label looks like. This is going to be a big success. I can see it stacked in supermarkets. This is going to sell a lot of wine.
Michael picked up the chalk and started to draw.
Quick, quick, draw a foot.
What kind of foot?
A nice foot. Just draw it.
Michael sketched his slim right foot along the bottom of the chalkboard.
No, no, no. Stand it up.
He erased it and drew one with the heel at the bottom and the toes straight up.
Close. Tilt it to the right.
He erased and drew again.
No, no, more tilt. Just a little. Make it look like there's some motion. It's like someone is stepping up.
Bonnie's voice was getting louder. She was talking faster, feeling like this was even more urgent. Her panic was growing. They could not lose this idea.
Is that it?
By now, the chalkboard had a layer of white dust from all the erased chalk.
Really close. The foot should look like an exclamation point, an italicized exclamation point. And give it a little more arch.
It got more tilt. It got more arch.
How's that?
Now write barefoot.
Michael put down barefoot next to the angled drawing.
Closer. Move it closer. Put the T all the way inside the arch.
Bonnie stopped bouncing and looked at it. The board was nearly white. The air was filled with chalk dust. They stood silently, surrounded by their intensity. Both were taking big breaths. Bonnie's fear had dissipated. They looked at a slim right foot, pointing up at a 2 o'clock angle, acting as an exclamation point for the barefoot written into the arch. They both thought it was good, but they had no idea that in not much more than a decade, it would become an iconic national label.
There. That's what the label looks like. That's going to sell a lot of wine.
So that is amazing. What I'd like to know from the two of you is you both really think way, way outside the box. You can talk about the story that you had all this winery given to you and you didn't know what to do with it. And then you came up with a way to do it, but you keep reinventing ways. You know, I think you're like the poster children for the word pivot. When something yes. isn't going right, you pivot. And so I'd like to find out kind of more about that. And because there's a number of people who don't pivot. They get stuck, they stay stuck. And they're good people, but they just don't know how to get out of being unstuck. So let me give you the question I ask everyone. What matters most to you? And then I'm going to shut up and just listen. I got the book behind me. But talk to us.
Well, what matters most to us, I believe, and Bonnie can speak for herself because I'm speaking for the both of us, is to really communicate and convey the principles that we learned the hard way to save others from the pain. You know, you go through life and you have these experiences and you have your aha moments and you realize that you've been operating under a misconception and then boom, you know, you have the big awakening, right? And, you know, it's one thing to say, I'm really glad I had that awakening. Boy, I save lots of money and time now. I know what I'm supposed to do. But it's quite another to actually give that lesson to someone else who is facing the similar situation. I wish we had had people who could coach us at the time. It would have taken us less time and it probably would have cost us a whole lot less.
Oh, don't forget the anxiety. It's not just time and money. It's the emotion that you go through, the ups, the downs, the confusion, you know, the big black hole apparently that you've fallen into. Yeah. And responding to what you'd said before about, you know, having out of the box thinking, the way that a person can think that makes that possible is believing that there's a way out of the box.
Yeah.
If you don't think there's no way out of the box, then you're stuck there. You've got those four walls, you've got the ceiling and the floor, you're all boxed in, and there's no place to go. One of the advantages that Michael and I had was we didn't know anything about the industry. So we really were starting off outside the box. There was no box that we were in, but we had to discover what other people had learned who were in the industry. And that was a big challenge for us. But because we came in with a fresh set of eyes, we were able to do things and make things happen that hadn't happened before. We were trying to satisfy all the people that we had to deal with to get our product to the end user. And what an experience to find out and satisfy what their needs were. To answer your question, what matters most to me, I aspire to inspire. And I never thought I would be a public speaker. I don't know how I let Michael talk me into it in the first place. But the day that I was talking to an audience, maybe a couple hundred people, there was about, you know, a quarter of them at least were Asian women. And they were all students of entrepreneurship. And after our talk, there was a lot of the women that came up to me and said how much I'd inspired them and encouraged them. Being a female, being successful, they could really relate to me, and you know, they saw me as a leader, which gave me a lot of responsibility and obligation, and I wanted to give them, you know, the best advice possible. But as we were walking out and we were on the sidewalk, these two women, Asian women, came up to me, and this one woman, she started jumping up and down and laughing and raising her arms in the air. And she said, I love you, I love you, I love you. And I started jumping up and down with her and laughing. And we hugged each other. And maybe that was a bit premature to express her love for me that way. But I knew it was coming from the fact that I'd inspired her and encouraged her. And that was one of the best feelings I've ever had. So yes, I aspire to inspire.
So I come up with book titles from talks like this and I give them away. So here's a book title for you that you could write called Be Inspired, How to silence the inner naysayer.
That's good.
That's what you did, because, you know, people often, you know, from certain cultures, Asian cultures, they have a real inner naysayer.
Yes.
And that Many naysayer can really shut you down. I heard a great quote from someone, and it said, when someone says no to you, it doesn't mean you shouldn't do something or you're wrong to do it. It just means they won't help you.
Oh, interesting.
That's very good. We say the only one who can really say no is you, and that's when you stop asking.
Ooh,
you stop
I love
seeking.
It. Yeah, no, yeah. I love that. I love that. So also, I've known Mike Lombani for some years now. You know, what I've always picked up and loved and envied about the two of you is you don't seem to be naysayers to each other.
Thank you.
I think what destroys relationships is when you have a naysayer, you know,
discouraging.
Oh, it's very discouraging. And in fact, something I'll share, recently got my first A++ partner. He's a 21-year-old Hispanic in Florida. And whenever we come up with something, he doesn't scold me. He says, well, let's tweak it this way, and then I think it'll work. Whereas a number of other people would say this phrase, and if I hear it again, I'm going to shoot someone. They will step in when I'm passionate. They'll say, well, how are you going to monetize, Mark? How are you going to monetize now? And yes, I want to monetize it, but gee, let me finish the sentence.
You know, this goes back to something you said earlier, and maybe now's a good time to mention it. But, you know, you were talking about out of the box, and you're talking about how people can overcome these roadblocks. One of the things that we discovered is that as human beings, we all want to see, you know, the route to success all laid out for you, you know, every stepping stone, you know, and when you try to explain what you're doing to another person, if you can't explain all the stepping stones mm-hmm. to them, they can turn out being naysayers, or they can pick apart the stepping stones. So one of the things that we learned, and we implore others to try this, is to keep faith in your goal, but don't worry so much about how you're going to get there. And by focusing on your goal and how happy it's going to make people who benefit by your achievement of that goal and what it is that you're giving those people and the value of that, the stones seem to appear more readily from almost out of nowhere. So it's not about having the plan all nailed down or else it's wrong. It's more about understanding your goal and why you're doing it.
And then you're keeping your eyes and ears open for ways to do it. And of course, if you believe the naysayers, then your eyes and ears are closed to the way to make it happen.
Yeah.
You know, something I'll tell my listeners, our listeners, about Michael and Bonnie that I've always appreciated, and that's why you must check them out. Check out this audiobook. Check out anything they've written. They talked about, you know, keeping your eyes on the goal, you know, so that you can remain inspired. But maybe it's because they were outsiders. Their steps are like Lego-like blocks. I mean, so they've developed steps that you can follow, and one step goes to the next, to the next, to the next. And what I've discovered is when you can come up with processes that are like that, you don't fall through the cracks. And they are amazing at that, even though what they're saying is let the blocks, you know, find you or the stepping stones. But you really need to check out not just what they've done, but how they've done it. Because what I've discovered is when there's too much wiggle room between the steps, people fall through the cracks.
Mm-hmm. And also when people have an inner no-sayer, as you say, we had a real experience one time. It was raining. I was late for work. I went out to the car and I realized that I didn't have the keys and the car was locked. And I had this inner naysayer saying, now you're going to be late for work. You're going to have to look all through the house. You're going to, you know, turn everything over looking for those keys. You're going to waste a lot of time. Sure enough, I go in the house. I open a drawer where I keep the keys. They're not in there. I go to the kitchen. They're not there. I go to the bathroom. They're not there. I go to the bedroom. I can't find the keys. Finally, I just stopped. I went back to the drawer where the keys were supposed to be. I looked in the drawer and there they were. Why didn't I see them the first time? It's because I probably blinded myself with my preconceived notion that they weren't there. And this is the real danger of the inner no-sayer, is that it can blind you to those Lego blocks and extensions that you need to get around obstacles, because you say, oh, this is going to be a tremendous obstacle. You know, this is going to stop me. I don't know how I'm going to get around with it. So it's really more, I think, about what gives you the willpower to keep your eyes open, and what is it that closes you down and makes you look narrow? So I think what Bonnie's talking about is looking for answers 24/7. And your mind is an amazing tool. You know, it's like a computer. It's working day and night. You're taking a shower. Your brain is working on a problem you had last week. It's still working on it. And you'll see something or hear something. Somebody will say something and boom, the flash. And that's what the chalkboard scene was all about. You know, we had to ask people what the label should look like. Some people said, well, you got to see it from 4 feet away. Well, the name's got to be the same as the logo. People have to identify with it. Well, this is a lot of advice. But then, bang, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, we've been out with friends, we're coming home, I can't wait to go to bed, and here's Bonnie jumping up and down.
It came to me in a flash. It's all the advice that we'd gotten came together in one picture.
You know, one of my former mentors, Warren Bennis, big leadership guy, and he died a few years ago, and he gave me this quote, which I think I've mentioned in previous podcasts, but I'll mention it again here. He quoted a playwright named Saul Bellow, and the quote was, be a first-class noticer. Because when you notice things, it's different than looking, watching, and seeing. When you look, watch, and see, you're passive. But when you notice, like I just noticed that when I said the word be a first class notice, you both went, like you took it in and you were tasting it. I noticed that you liked the sound of it. And so I think what happened is, was interesting, because you were blinded with the keys, you didn't notice that they were there. But what happened is as you were hearing all the input about what a label should be, okay, the name should match the logo, what could that be? I think what it is your noticers. And I also know the story about how you couldn't sell the wines and you donated them to charities. And so I think if you're listening, feel the freedom, the courage to be a first-class noticer, and the naysayers around you will try and stop that. I've actually come up, you know, one of my latest book is called Talking to Crazy, How to Deal with the People That Drive You Crazy. So I have all these tactics, and people say, you know, Mark, that book is so passive-aggressive. Well, so be it. So this is what I say to naysayers now. So if someone says no, I rather than getting agitated, I let them finish, and I say, you're certainly welcome to say no. You're certainly welcome to say it'll never work. You're certainly welcome to say, what were you thinking? But unless after that you help me brainstorm what to do now, I've just deleted everything you said. And then I'd say, yeah, to say that'll never work just leaves me out on a limb feeling alone. So unless you're willing to brainstorm with me about how it could work, that's why I love this young partner. I mean, we just brainstorm. So I'll come up with these crazy ideas and he'll say, that'll never work on Twitter, but it'll work on Instagram.
Exactly. You're looking for yes. That's it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
We used to play a game, Mark, and we called it the no game. And it was for anybody in our office, but salesmen of any industry get a lot of no's. And it's discouraging, right? So we wanted it not to be discouraging, to be fun. Michael and I believe in having fun. So any challenge that we've got, let's find a way to make it fun. So we made it fun by creating the no game. We took a poll of all the people that we were working with, and we said, well, how many no's do you usually get before you get to yes? Oh, well, the number was 7. That's a lot of no's, right? So if you've got less than 7 no's, you're not there at the average yet. So you don't have anything to complain about. And if you're over 7, well, then you're much closer to getting to a yes, right? That's encouraging. And we say, if you get a no, you ask a different day, a different way, or a different person. And you just keep doing it until you get to yes. So you never give up on the idea that you're going to get to yes. And like I'd said before, the only one that can really say no and stop you is yourself. And that's when you stop seeking yes. So that was our no game. That's how we made fun of it.
I love that. Say that again. So a different day.
A different day or a different person.
That is terrific. Wow.
You know, sometimes people say no just because that day they got out on the wrong side of their bed and you're the guy that walked into their office, you see, or they got some terrible news right before they picked up the phone with you. So you come back a different day, the same guy might have had a lovely experience that day and he's much more pliable. Or you ask a different way, and by asking a different way, is you reframe the question, you learn more about what the person is looking for, so that when you do reframe the question, you reframe it in terms that are significant and important to the person who's giving you the permission. And we found that the more you get no, the better you get at getting to yes, as long as you follow those three rules.
You know, there's something that's along those lines. I want to run it by you. Sometimes when I give talks, I'll ask people, raise your hand if you've had any breakthroughs in your life. And they raise their hand. And I'll say, raise your hand if you've had more than 5 breakthroughs in your life. Most of them will raise their hand. And I'll even get, raise your hand if you've had more than 100. And people raise their hand. And then I say, let me ask you, of all of those breakthroughs, raise your hand if they were preceded by a breakdown that wasn't pleasant, wasn't invited, that was even discouraging and scary. And nearly all of them raised their hands. And then I say, did you make the connection that most breakthroughs are preceded by breakdowns, which is really your mind and brain reorganizing itself? Because you had the breakdown because the way you were heading, it just wasn't working, but it was just so painful that, you know, you did your best to just get through it or get by it. But there's a relationship between the breakdown and the breakthrough. And it was really helpful to them because they said, oh my God, you're right. It's almost cause and effect. And sometimes the breakdown has nothing to do with the breakthrough. It's just your brain and mind falling apart from the direction that you were going. And when your brain and mind get a chance to reorganize, different options reveal themselves to you. But most people don't make the connection between those two.
Well, it's pretty hard to learn lessons unless you're making mistakes. When you're making mistakes, you don't feel bad about that, but you're encouraged by it. Because if it's handled properly, you learn from those mistakes. And you can create something in writing, document or a contract or a checklist to make that mistake less likely to happen again. And that's the breakthrough, is this particular mistake that happened is much less likely to happen again. And other people won't be making it because I made it. So we celebrated mistakes. We said, We're so happy that you screwed up in that way. We never imagined anyone would ever do it. But because you did, now instead of saying sit down, we're going to say sit down, don't stand up. And that is the difference. You figure out what you can do to make it less likely to happen again. And you do it in writing and you share it with everybody you know. And that's how we would celebrate mistakes.
And what did you call that?
Well, we said, never waste a perfectly good mistake.
I love that. You know, you just inspire, this is not a book title, but people, these conversations inspire things, and feel free to use this if you like it. As you were just talking, Bonnie, I was thinking, if you break the word mistake into a mistake, in other words, your take on a situation was just the wrong day, the wrong way, the wrong person. But yes. If people can have that trigger that a mistake is not a failure, it was my take on the situation just wasn't accurate. So Paul,
exactly.
what would be how to turn a mistake into a new take?
Hey, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
I like
write that.
That
down.
Good.
Write that. That's yours. You inspired it. It's you don't even have to give me credit. But how to turn a mistake into a new take on a situation?
I like it. I like it, Mark.
Well, you guys inspire me. So other lessons for our listeners, and our, you may not be aware of it, but my listeners are used to these conversations going in 93 different directions. So the people who like things to be linear often they don't listen to my podcast. But this has been a beautiful conversation. So what else can you teach us from your smart, bright, fun wisdom?
Well, it's wisdom that was painfully achieved. We're really no different than anybody else. It's just that we take notes. And, you know, it's like mistakes. We say make mistakes right. Well, it's not just R-I-G-H-T. It's W-R-I-T-E. And, you know, by taking the time to write down what happened and what the outcome was, you know, it's a type of therapy. You know, you get to use your hand, you're using your eye, you're reading it, your mind is looking at it. And that kind of loosens things up, because we all have a tendency to let our ego get involved in our course of action. So we say, okay, I'm going from point A to point B, and I'm going in this direction, see, to get there. Well, that might not be the way to get to point B. But you're not going to find the way if you're stubbornly closed-minded, or if you don't analyze what it is that seems to be blocking you. 90% of the time, you know, you're just blinded to opportunities that are around you all the time because, like I said, and I'm guilty of this, your ego gets involved. You have an investment in it, right? This is the way I've been doing it. You know, it's going to succeed. I'm going to achieve this. Well, maybe you can achieve it a whole lot easier in a different way. So I guess one of the pearls of wisdom that we can pass along is ask for help. That's what we do. We ask our friends. People always say, well, what do you do when you get discouraged? What do you do when you get knocked down? Well, I go back to the early adapters and I call them up and I say, Mark, tell me again why you thought that was such a great idea. I really need to hear it again. You know, just because when you think about it, the fuel of tenacity is validation. And with validation, your mind is opened up. You go, oh, that's right. This is going to be a success. I just have to find a different way to do it, or couch it a different, you know, in a different way. So, yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned something about taking notes. You know, something that I've noticed is the difference between people who are, 90% of people are ready for change, but only 10% are ready to change.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that the people who are ready to change, they take notes, because otherwise they're not going to recall it. Otherwise, they're venting their frustration and they're confusing feeling better with actually resolving anything. And I think note-taking is so important. In fact, I'll show you something. Our listeners can't see it, but I've been keeping a journal since 1976. I'm on volume 250, 45,000 pages.
Oh, my gosh.
That's amazing.
And I'll tell you, I started doing it to deal with the naysayers. So what happened is I dropped out of medical school twice, probably for untreated depression. And when I finally got through, I took out a notebook. It's right, you know, they're right next to me, a real little crappy notebook. At least the quality has improved. And the first thing I wrote down when I graduated is, I can't believe I made it through. They've released the madman. And so what happens is, I keep those journals because I'll think about something and I don't share them necessarily with the world because there'll be a lot of naysayers who will say, well, what does that have to do with anything? Well, you know, how are you going to make money at that and whatever. And so there's something about actually having a thought or a feeling and writing down. It's a way of honoring your own thoughts and feelings, regardless of what the world says to you. And so I've been doing it since 76 and, you know, and I didn't know I was a writer. You know, what would happen is I'd start writing things, you know, that I wanted to think about later. And then when I'd keep repeating them, I'd say, oh, looks like that could be an article. That could be a book. That could be something or other. So I hope if you're listening in, start keeping a journal.
Yeah.
And do something that I didn't do. Start with a nice one. My first 100 journals were crappy. Spiral stuff. I look at them. They have mildew on them. You know, treat your thoughts and feelings to something nice. Moleskin maybe a year from now. That's too expensive even for me.
Very good. Very good.
But thank you both. Thank you both so much. So why don't you, how can people find out more about the two of you, where to find you? I know we mentioned it at the beginning, but let's bookend it with your telling them at the end here.
We have a website, www.thebarefootspirit.com. And our audiobook has samples on it. On that website, www.barefootaudiobook.com. You can hear the entire first chapter at no charge. And I'm sure if you hear the first chapter, you're going to want to hear the next 9. Because it's quite a wild adventure that we went on. And we have an excellent author, Rick Cushman, that wrote the book that became a New York Times bestseller by the name The Barefoot Spirit. And now that we have it in an audiobook form, we've got it dramatically acted out. It's like 3D audio. You see it all in your mind. You have different professional actors that are acting out the different parts in the stories that are told. And it's sound effects, original music score. It's really an exciting production. And business books haven't been done that way before, so of course, we decided we could do it. Why not?
There you go, outside the box. And also, if you're listening, and I hope this is okay for me to say, Michael and Bonnie, they sent me a Dropbox file with the audio clips, with multiple introductions that I could use. I used one of them today. They covered, I don't think I've ever had a guest on that made my role so easy. And if you're listening in and you're an aspiring author or whatever, and I know they're generous in their spirit, and I know if that would be okay, but see if they'd send you that Dropbox file because they covered everything. I've never received something that was just so complete and gave me so many options of how to interact with them. And I think it's a great model for anybody who's promoting a book, a movement, a play, whatever. So I hope that's okay if I mention that because I just
that's wonderful.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, we're happy to share it.
And that goes back to what I'd said earlier: find out what the other guy wants and give it to him. Make the other guy's job easier.
Yep.
And that's what we believe in.
Yeah, and you do it so well. So that brings us to the end of another episode. I want to thank my listeners for listening in. And as you know, everybody has wake-up calls, but not everybody wakes up. And a wake-up call is really a terrible thing to waste, so make sure you don't waste it. And until next time, share this with friends if you like it. It helps if you write some comments at iTunes, because that seems to help the algorithm and helps us to do a better job of what we're doing. And please contact us about people that you'd like to have on My Wake Up Call. So until next week, this is Dr. Mark signing off, and thank you for listening in.